The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. And this week, Linda E. is substituting for Mark Sigmund because he is on vacation. Linda, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
What's new?
Nothing too much is new. You know, the CDC finally came out with the figures for the ODs for 2022, and I was very surprised that it's over 100,000 Americans that died of overdose deaths in 2022. They're expecting it to be stable, the same number for 2023. And I want to know how we're going to start saving these lives. How are we going to keep the fentanyl out of this supply?
Well, you know, this number they gave is only the reported cases anyway, so it's way over 100,000. And I'm surprised because the information I've been getting is this is not getting any better. It's getting worse.
Absolutely.
So what can I tell you? It's a bad situation we're in. What was the number for in 22?
22, the number was 108,000 reported. So that's pretty bad. And they're saying the first 10 months of 23, it'll be similar, that it seems stable. But that's way too many people dying.
So to put that in perspective, how many seats are at a Philadelphia Phillies ball game? Anybody know?
Oh, I don't know. What could they fit?
Maybe somebody could
70,000 people?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So that, let's just say it's that number. Double a whole stadium of dead people and the baggage that they leave behind to their families and friends. 100,000 people has to affect millions of people.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's pretty terrible. So, all right, anything else shocking in the news today or what?
I didn't see anything shocking.
You started telling me about something in Kensington.
Yes.
For our out-of-state, out-of-area viewers, Kensington is a ground zero for outdoor heroin, Xyzaline, any kind of drug addiction in the open. It is starting to be cleaned up because of a new mayor, new administration in Philadelphia. Is it getting cleaned up, do you know?
On Tuesday is going to be the first day that groups like that go down there to give aid.
Yeah.
Groups, not Prevention Point because they have a place there, but the people that go down to give showers, to give food out, to give blankets out, whatever, they've been told not to come this week. And so all of them have posted, we are still going. We are still taking care of our people. So Tuesday or Wednesday, Wednesday is the day they usually bring the shower vans down there and let them shower and everything. And I just think there's going to be a horrible fight. They're saying everybody's going to get picked up for possession starting Tuesday, Wednesday, and they're going to start taking people to jail, and they're not going to let these people help anybody.
Well, look, just my opinion. They don't want these resources coming in there because if they don't come in, the people are going to start to make a decision if they want to leave the area, they want to go into treatment, they want to get locked up. You know? So the whole thing is sad, Linda. We've both been down and we've seen it. It is really, really horrible. Okay, listen, when we come back, we have a great show lined up. Our dear friend of the show, Judge Christopher Maddox, is going to be with us, and we're going to learn a lot of things. And this is a great opportunity if you want to talk to a sitting judge on the bench. You'll call in and have the opportunity. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
What's happening? Brandon Novak here from Those Movies Jack Zor, author of that addiction memoir, Dream Seller. Do me a favor and tune into Clean and Sober Radio with Gary Hendler.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, you can also enjoy Clean and Sober Radio on WWDB, which you're listening to now, Philadelphia, 97.5 FM, High Def 2 in Philadelphia, and WGAC, Augusta, Georgia, and WNBR, Tampa, Florida.
Hear ye, hear ye, the court's in session, the court's in session. Now, here come the judge, here come the judge.
Here come the judge!
And our guest is Magisterial District Judge Chris Maddox. Chris, thanks for coming back on the show, man. It's always great having you on.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You weren't offended by that, were you?
No.
You know who sang that song?
I do not.
A guy named Shorty Long.
Okay.
From 1963.
Wow. Now I do.
Now you do. Hey, welcome to the show.
Yeah, this is like our yearly date.
Yes.
We always do this. This is the
first
date.
The springtime. I'm always interviewing the judge.
Yeah, but Mark goes away.
Right.
And here we are. So, you know, for our viewers, let's first talk about what does a magisterial district judge do?
Right. We do a lot. So let's start with criminal. We do the search warrants and arrest warrants for the police. So that would be before anything, you know, maybe they're suspecting somebody of something. They'll ask for a search warrant. They have to have probable cause. The arrest warrant, they have someone in mind as a suspect. They want to go apprehend them. They can get a warrant ahead of time to arrest them that way, other than maybe something that happens right in front of them, and then obviously they arrest without a warrant. And then right after that, the very first stage in front of the judge is the arraignment, and that's where Gary came along one day and saw me do it in the new room in media. But that's the first stage where the defendant comes in front of the judge, and the judge lets them know about their rights, the rights to an attorney, the right to a preliminary hearing, which is usually scheduled 3 to 10 days after they come in front of us, and then also obviously bail, and then we'll deal with them at the arraignment, whether there's bail or there's not bail. And then the next step after that is the preliminary hearing. And that's where, whether it's more likely than not, that's the standard that we use, that this particular person committed these particular crimes with these particular elements, which, of course, is the burden of the prosecution's office to prove, or the defense attorney to sort of knock down. And then after the arraignment, we also – that's pretty much the criminal process.
Mm-hmm.
We also do civil cases, what I call my Judge Judy cases, you know, $12,000 or less. You know, my neighbor turfed up my lawn with his car. A contractor came to my house and didn't do the job, didn't do what I paid him to do. There's that. There's also what we call traffic and non-traffic cases. So your traffic cases are your speeding violations, your stop signs, things like that. Your non-traffic cases are like, you know, underage drinking, disorderly conduct, all summary offenses, not as serious as like a misdemeanor or a felony in a criminal matter. And then we also do another hearing that Gary came in to see, my landlord and tenant. And I think I have him trained to be a judge at some point. But
he would love that.
I said to Judge Maddox, you'll come and do the show one Friday and I'll sit on the bench.
Sure.
It would probably – no, it wouldn't be illegal. Yeah, it would be illegal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we had to get you certified
first.
But
you'd be the judge, so I wouldn't get in any trouble, right?
Well, we would get you certified first.
So let me ask a question. So in a preliminary, the police bring somebody in. Is there a prosecutor there? Somebody from the district?
During the arraignment?
Yes. The preliminary.
The preliminary hearing.
Some
departments prosecute their own cases, like smaller departments. But I think in Delaware County in 2024, I'd be surprised if there's not a prosecutor in every court that's prosecuting the cases. But in the past, there would be, you know, you might be in a smaller town, and the police may actually do the hearing and present the witnesses and the evidence. And but I, in Upper Darby, we've always, I've been doing this for 21 years. In Upper Darby, we've always had a prosecutor, an assistant prosecutor to help.
So Upper Darby is a county outside of Philadelphia. It is one of the smaller counties, but is the, one of the more densely populated counties, which makes, you know, people, too many people living together. It's, can you stop a case? Do you have the, do you have the authority to stop a case? Somebody's brought in for a preliminary and the police, can you say, I'm going to
dismiss it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If they do not produce the evidence, now most reasonable inferences are given to them. It, you know, it's a very low standard to meet, whether it's more likely than not, as I said before. But yeah, if they don't meet the and that's, it might not be the whole case. It could just be an offense, like a crime, one of the crimes, one of the offenses, I should say. It could just be or it could be the whole case. If they don't make their case, then yes. And I have thrown some out, and sometimes people don't like that. But, yeah, I have to be fair to everybody.
Right.
I have to do my job, and I take it very seriously. You know I do. And,
yes, I know you do.
And I, you know, I like to be thought of as, like, he's a fair guy, and he's giving me a fair shot.
When you say people don't like it, you mean the police or the
– Yeah, or some residents maybe, depending. Yeah. I mean, but we don't – I always say we're not in the people-pleasing business.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, what we see, what we deal with, what we do. But I just at the end of the day, I have to go and look myself in the mirror and say that I did exactly what I thought I should do under the circumstances.
Right. If you're just joining us now, we're talking with a magisterial justice, Chris Maddox. And also, just when you hear a female's voice, Linda E. is a filling in for Mark because he's wherever he is. Yeah. All right.
So are you, all your arraignments video, or do they bring you the prisoners? They're
now,
all video.
That's a great question. Since COVID.
Yes.
In COVID, we started by video. Now they've determined that saves costs with maybe constables transporting. Maybe it's a more
safety,
secure and safe environment. But I've often said, and I think I said it on this show the last time I was here, a lot of us judges really want that feel to see that person in front of us.
Yes.
And that's taken away. But other than that, it works reasonably well. It's working. And yes, they're all by video now.
Okay.
Chris, what are you seeing about defendants being brought in for drug charges, you know, abuse, alcohol, whatever you want to call it? Did you see an increase in it? Is it leveling off? Or I know it's not going lower.
Right.
Know.
Yeah. I was thinking about this before the show. I have not made as many referrals to second chance court as I have in the past. So I'm not seeing as many of the, like, the possession cases or the, you know, the user cases. Now, of course, I have plenty of the distribution cases, yeah, and I have plenty of the, you know, more violent type cases and things like that. I don't know that things are getting better, though. I don't know that I could make that statement. But I will say in my own court, I've seen not as many, because I was like one of the ones that was sort of given, you know, a pat on the back, because, like, wow, you're really on top of this second chance court. You're really sending us a lot of people, and that's great. And, you know, it's helpful and things like that. But I just haven't and remember, when I'm on call for arraignments out in media, that's the whole county that I'm doing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I don't know what the answer is. Maybe it's an enforcement thing. Maybe they're concerned with other things and there's not as much going on, or maybe people are more, you know, secretive about their use, but I don't know. I mean, like you said, you referred to Kensington, but I don't know, but to answer your question, I have done less referrals to second chance court. I don't know why right now, but because the problem isn't going away.
No, it's not going away. If you want to get involved with the conversation, please call us at 1-888-728-9941, 1-888-728-9941. You know, it's not every day you get a chance to sit to talk to a sitting judge. So
I wonder if the police are just picking up less people for possession.
That could be.
They're working on the dealers or the up the line people.
That could be very, very possible.
And the Leddy program that was started by then Attorney General Josh Shapiro, Law Enforcement Treatment Initiative, mm-hmm. is a program to our audience where the police have been given the power to make a determination when they pick somebody up to give them the opportunity to get into treatment.
Yeah, and I think more and more departments in Delaware County are going to that because I think somebody just announced the other day. I don't want to say the town because I might be wrong, but yes, that helps, I think, with people that are substance abusers rather than dealers or yes.
Yeah, and Linda, I think you might have brought this up. The judges now, I know for a fact in Montgomery County, are not putting people in prison like they used to. It's more of, you know, low-level crimes, drug, whatever. They're putting bracelets on them. That's why yeah. in Montgomery County Correctional, which is outside of Philadelphia, we're only half full.
Okay.
So I wanted to talk about that if I could.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So one of the things during an arraignment is we set bail. And I brought the rule because I didn't want to botch it. But Criminal Rule 520.1 of the Criminal Rules of Procedure in Pennsylvania say that the purpose of bail is to release timely a defendant at the earliest stage with any conditions to reasonably assure, and then they go into what used to be the purpose of bail, the defendant's appearance for court and the safety of the community, including the victim, from harm by the defendant. So they've sort of put that on a back seat, and now the purpose of bail is to release people. So, yeah. I am not the legislator, so I don't make the rules. Mm-hmm. But I am the judge and I interpret the rules, and that's the way I interpret it. And that's what I think you're referring to, and is that, or you were referring to, that more people are being released. And that's why.
Yeah, absolutely. Or not even being remanded together. The other thing, just to bring it up, is probation. If we can talk a little bit about probation. Preliminary hearing. Can you make that decision?
No.
It goes up to common pleas,
yes,
right?
Yes, that goes up to the common pleas.
You know, I had asked, I'm not going to answer this, another board member. I can't even tell you what he does because I know nobody now. I don't like probation.
Right.
And I'll tell you why. And people, you can all disagree with me. This is just my opinion. The judge has his opinion. Except he has to go to law, you know, by the law. And Linda has her opinion. I think once you do your time or you finish up your probation, it should be over with.
Right.
But now, you know, it goes on and on because of social media, whatever. You know, this sticks with you even after you have completed probation or parole, which hinders you in employment, housing, and just a whole lot of stuff for a long time. You know, it should be, okay, get probation. I don't know how long. And then it should be over. If you do something again, then you get rearrested.
Right. And you get clients in Community Health Mind were all court ordered. And they would rather stay in jail another 6 months than have to come out and do 2 years of probation and parole. Because it is just so difficult when you're home and you're dealing with your family and you're trying to get a job to still follow all these rules, especially if you don't have transportation. And they're expecting you to show up and give a sample and everything once a week.
Right.
And it's prohibitive.
It's also with drug court. And I think drug court helps a lot of people. But it's very difficult. As you said,
many restrictions.
Most of these people, you know, might not have jobs. They have to get transportation. They don't have cars. And they must be at a certain place at a certain time.
Absolutely.
Or it's a violation.
Now, you were saying earlier about, you know, you just give them a bracelet and you release them. I was never a big fan of that. My thing was that when the person is in front of me and I'm you know, they're either they need to be there in jail or they don't. And I'm looking for any reason to release them that I can, provided that they're going to show up for court and they're not a danger to the community. Okay. Obviously, that was always the way that I did it. One of the things that I didn't know was that if you put them on electric home monitoring, that's expensive.
To them.
Oh, yeah.
To them.
Yes, that is not an easy thing to do. But now, I have to be fair, now they have this GPS monitoring.
Yes.
And it's a lot cheaper and it's a lot easier. So now I may have to rethink my position. But I really, really had to think about it before deciding to put somebody on electric home monitoring because it was so expensive and it was really it wasn't an easy thing.
And
for
they had
them.
To have a landline.
Yeah. Yes,
and a that landline. Was expensive for some right. of their families to put a landline
Correct.
In. And
you know
all
what
that.
Else, Linda? If you're lucky enough, you don't go to jail. You have a DUI, and you have to put an Intoxilock in your car.
Oh boy.
That's like $100 and some a month.
Oh, it's the installation is about $5.50 to $1,000.
Yeah, I know.
To
I've
put
been
it
through.
In.
I've been through.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, not for me, but
okay.
You know. So yeah, I mean, you have to think so many obstacles and so many things you have to consider before you sentence somebody.
Well, we don't sentence, but yes, before yeah. we deal with someone. But mm-hmm. getting back to, I believe you were just talking about
probation.
The probation. We're not involved in that, but I understand what you're saying. I'm
not asking for opinion.
We've spoken about that before.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
well, the thing, what I find interesting that I had no idea till I got involved in the system is that you're on probation. You have a probation officer. You have rules to follow. If you do something wrong and they have to put you back in jail or rearrest you, then they have something called a gag two hearing in media. And that's really not part of the docket,
right?
Which is very interesting. They're on a whole different set of rules. Maybe you can tell us about that.
Is that a gag non?
No, that's beyond me. So okay. I don't really do that. But I mean, maybe one of your criminal defense attorneys.
We got a couple of those.
Yeah, they can come in and talk about that process. But yeah,
Pam C from Lansing, Michigan, Judge, can you find a defendant innocent even if police want him found guilty?
Well, we don't. Find them innocent, but we can dismiss the case.
Yeah, right.
We can certainly dismiss the case, and we have.
Does that upset the police?
I think sometimes. Sometimes no. I mean, if the witnesses don't show up, which happens a lot in these domestic cases, unfortunately, you know, there's reluctant witnesses in a case. Maybe they don't have the proof they need for the case. But no, if they make an arrest that they feel is a good arrest and it's tight and, you know, and the judge all of a sudden throws it out, then yeah, I'm sure they might be upset. But I believe that at least in my court, you know, we have a good relationship. We respect each other. And like I said before, I have to be fair to everybody. So I let the defense attorneys do their thing. I let the prosecutors do their thing. And I just make my decision. It's really that simple for me.
Judge, can you make a decision on the bench? Because I know another Judge Duffy does this. Can you say to the defendant, I'll tell you what, either you go into treatment or you're going to do some time. Can you do that?
Yeah, but I think it's more like with our second chance court, it's voluntary. Yeah. So like if somebody comes in for an arraignment, and we identify that they're a user or, you know, substance abuse problem, whatever, then we send them to second chance court where the PD, the public defender, or someone will meet with them and ask them, do you want to do this? Do you want to do second chance court, which is for, like, users, not dealers.
Right, sure.
And nonviolent offenses.
Right.
And maybe small theft cases. You know, back in the 70s, the 80s. The 90s, what was the biggest offense that went along? Retail theft, right?
Yep.
Especially baby formula. I could never understand. Why do I have so many cases with people stealing baby formula?
It's expensive.
Well,
right?
I mean, it's something that they could – anyway, my point is that a minor like theft offense can also get you to second chance court, but it's voluntary. I don't want to comment on what another judge may do or may not do, but it doesn't – if it's put forth the right way, it doesn't sound like it's not something that cannot be done.
Great. So. Hey, listen, so for everybody that is just listening to the show around the world, you can also watch us do the show on Facebook. And you can go to our Facebook page, which is Clean and Sober Radio, and you can watch Linda and I talking with Judge Maddox. It's, you know – he's a very good-looking guy.
And I watch it every Friday, so I know what you're talking about.
From the bench, right? Hey, I'll tell you, so like these friends of the show, Bob Moeller, Carlos Ricardo, Vince Kelly, Dustin Green, Linda Garrity is watching, Kathy Wolf Collin is watching. She put a really funny thing on Facebook. Mike Brill says, Happy Friday, Miracle Workers. And it is an honor your honor, and thanks for all the work and support you supply our community. That's nice. Mike Brill.
Yeah, thank you.
That's nice stuff. J.J. Guido is watching. Edmund Anthony IV. Brian Pontecorvo. I hope I got that right, Brian. Holly Herman Hoops is watching. Holly's an old dear friend of mine. We got a lot of people on here. Listen, here's what's do. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, you can talk to the judge. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
When you look into the mirror, do you see your addiction to drugs or alcohol staring back at you? At Gaudenzia, in that mirror, we see you, healthy and at peace. At Gaudenzia, we see the tools you can use to recover the life you want to live. Hope is in the effective treatment we can offer, designed uniquely for you. Your hope is waiting at Gaudenzia. Call 833-976-4357. 833-976-4357. Through Gaudenzia, you can recover your life. Begin today.
Hey, man, this is Ricky Bird, former member of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, an inductee to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as of 2015. And I listen to Clean and Sober Radio, and so do my friends here, right?
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we are back with our guest judge, Christopher Maddox. You know, it's for, you know, we take it for granted we have a judge in here. This is an opportunity. 1-888-728-9941. Call the judge. Tell our audience what your experiences are going in front of a judge. You know, I mean, Chris is an exceptional judge, fair,
so fair,
strong, compassionate, and he gets the addiction issues here. Not the dealers, right, but the users.
So let me tell you a story. And the one thing that Gary hasn't seen me do is traffic and non-traffic cases. He's been with me for landlord-tenant. He's been with me for criminal. He saw some civil, too.
And so, my decisions, were they correct?
They were great.
Okay, good.
But so I was doing traffic about 2 months ago, and a woman came in. She was very upset, and she owed like $1,900. And I said, well, what's going on? And it wasn't for the offenses. She had already been found guilty. So it was what we call a payment determination hearing. So I have to determine, can she pay and how much can she pay a month? And so she started to break down in front of me, and she was like, Judge, I have two kids, 10 and 11. I'm a recovering addict. Boom, right? That hit me right away because I listened to the show all the time. But anyway, I said, well, let me ask you this. Have you been in jail? Have you done any time? She said, yeah, I did a little bit of time. I said, well, listen, it looks to me like you're really struggling and you're really trying to get it right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you time served. The $1,900 is done. Now go take care of your kids because they need you and go recover. And she was like so thankful and crying. She wanted to hug me. I think I couldn't let her do that. But it was a great – it made me feel really good. It was a great, great moment. But that's like an example of how the magisterial district judges can maybe help a little bit and be compassionate and understanding when someone comes in front of you and kind of do, I believe, the right thing for that woman in that particular case.
So. Yeah, I mean, you're the first line of defense. And actually, right, your position is more important, I think, in a way than common pleas, because you can stop. You can deal with the defendant in a way that is helpful to her family, the community, and it just feels it feels like you have, in a way, more effectiveness than a common police court judge.
And then if I could, in another case, a criminal case, a woman came in front of me. She had been using, and it was the first preliminary hearing. And the father was in the first row, and he stood up and he's like, Judge, please, I have to have her out. Like, she must get out. I have to have her. I said, Dad, I got it. Hold on. So we went through the thing. I heard from both sides, and I said, okay, well, she's going to go back to the prison. So he was upset, and so the next week she comes in front of me, and she's like, thank you, Judge. I understand what you did. You saved my life. You saved my life. Wow. So, I mean, you know, the pressure's there.
Yeah.
But, like, I understood that she needed help. And for me to let her out, she wasn't going to go get help. Now, bail is not to punish. I truly admit that. But it actually now under the new rules, it falls under the protection of the defendant from immediate risk of substantial physical self-harm. So they added that. That's one good thing they did do. So now with these treatment programs like Second Chance Court and things like we can keep them in jail for a little bit of time to get them on the right track, to get them treatment, to then hopefully get them out and continue with their treatment.
You have been inside of your county prison, George Hill.
I used to represent it before I was a judge.
You were,
really?
Yeah. You were a solicitor?
Mr. DiIorio was the solicitor. I worked for Bob.
Oh, okay.
And so, and it was right at the time when the county went from owning it to turning it over
and now
to
it's
a private company, and now it's back.
So seeing the inside of that facility, knowing where you're sending somebody, does the experience that you had inside that prison help you make a decision whether you're going to send somebody there or not?
Yeah, I think, as I said earlier, during an arraignment, I'm looking for any opportunity for that person to show me that I can let them out.
Yeah.
But let's face it, there's some things you just – I mean, like a violent person that, you know, just assaulted their family, I don't think that
–
they may have to stay a little while, right?
Yeah.
Until they get an attorney and we get – you know, things get looked at and whatnot. But – no, like in a normal case, yeah, that would play on my mind because I'd be thinking, do I really want to send this person out to prison just because they're just brought in front of me? I've told them what their charges are. I've told them what to expect, what the next hearing is, the preliminary hearing. I think that they can make it on the street. They won't reoffend. They won't hurt anybody. They won't hurt themselves. Okay, out they go. Let's see them at the preliminary hearing.
Is that a risk that you take because you let somebody and then they, you know, you do something crazy again?
Absolutely. Now, it was the parole board, but you saw what happened in Chicago recently, which was heartbreaking. An 11-year-old boy, I think, was killed when they paroled this guy who had just went – I mean, yes, those are the kind of things that as a judge, you know, go through my mind when I'm – and that's why I said I want to see the people in person.
Sure.
But again, like I said, the videos are working with the arraignments. But I like to talk to them, and I like that face to face, and that like we're doing. I mean, I like to be able to communicate with someone.
Do you do any juvenile cases, or are they heard somewhere else?
No, the juvenile is
all the media.
Yeah, well, we have like truancy cases, which are one judge.
Different.
Yeah, but nothing. The juvenile criminal cases are not for not
and,
ours.
And what are the ages of juvenile? Up to
under
what?
14.
Yeah, but so, 14. But you can be charged as an adult like at certain points,
right.
But
right.
But yeah,
addict's an adult at 14 legally.
What'd you say, Lynn?
An addict at 14 have their rights. So if an addict comes to see me in therapy, they can tell their parents. They can tell me not to include their parents. So at 14, you're an adult if you're an admitted addict.
Right.
But otherwise, you're not really. Of age, you're not 18 or 21. However, they have a lot of rights once they admit they're an addict.
Yeah, I think all the statutes are different, but I think most of them look at 18. But if you're a 16-year-old and you're involved in a significant criminal action, you could be – it's up to the DA, but you could be tried as an adult. So.
Yes.
Yeah, I always cringe, Judge, when I hear a 14-year-old is going to be sentenced in a bad prison – I know these people are horrible, these kids that are doing the shooting, but then the other part of my brain goes, oh my God, there's got to be a better solution to this. You don't have to answer it.
No. But you have some experience being on the prison board of Montgomery County, so maybe you can get something moving.
I'll get something moving. Sean L. from St. Paul, Minnesota. You know where that is?
I do. I have a brother out there.
Give me one state that touches.
What do you mean? It touches Kansas on the other side.
It touches Kansas?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I've never been that far. The furthest I went is Kansas City.
I'm asking you because I don't know.
Minnesota.
Brad, you know where it is?
Oh, don't get me.
Okay. So Sean L. says, I heard that you do not need to be a lawyer to become a magisterial district justice. We've discussed this a lot.
In Pennsylvania, that is correct. Yes. So in Pennsylvania, you can take a six-week course, and then provided that – and then there's an exam, and then provided that you pass that exam after 6 weeks, you're then able to, quote, run, because in Pennsylvania we elect our judges. You could then run for election if you get elected – and you pass that test, you're certified to be a judge.
Oh, we should do that in our spare time, right?
Do you have any outstandings?
I don't.
Nothing?
I just cleared up that last ticket.
Okay.
I thought that was what Gary was going for by sitting with me at all these courts. But right? I love having them. It's great.
I'll tell you something. It really is an honor to be with Judge Maddox, to sit up on that bench. Because, you know, I was thrown out of two law schools. And so this is the closest I could be to actually being a lawyer, sitting on the bench with him. It's
awesome.
And he's very compassionate, I got to tell you.
He is.
He thinks before he says stuff. And, the people in your that you represent are lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Really.
Nice.
For real. So, just joining us, we're talking to Judge Maddox. Our number is 1-888-728-9941. I guess people are scared to call into the show today because
I don't know why.
Well, remember, the Phillies are playing today.
Oh, so, it's the home opener, yeah. And it's Good Friday, right? Yeah, so we have a lot of things going on today.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of people. Here's something else. Hi, guys. Great show. Thank you, Your Honor, for your time and wisdom.
Oh, thank you.
That is from John Logue.
Oh, John.
Kevin Heyer is watching. Why did you want to be a judge?
Well, and initially I was a psychology major at Temple University.
I know, right.
And I was all set to be a 6-year program, PhD, teaching at either Virginia Tech or Northwestern or Northeastern. They were my three choices because the professor knew people at all those places. And but not unlike some of the kids in the 80s, I had one extra semester. So instead of 4 years, I did it in 4.5. Well, in that half semester, I said, well, let me go take some courses and let me do some like different things other than psychology. And I took a business law class. Uh-huh. And I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. So then I took the LSAT after I graduated. Before I graduated, because I had to wait another half year because you're 4.5. So in that half year, I took the LSAT. I did great.
Did you really?
Law school aptitude test, the LSAT.
Oh, man.
So then I went back to the professor. I went back to the professor and I told him and I said, Professor, I just want to let you know I appreciate everything you've done for me up to this point. But I think I'm going to go in another direction. I think I'm going to go to law school. And I tell people that's the first time I ever saw a grown man cry. Now, that's an exaggeration, but he did cry.
Really?
He's like, you're my best student. I can't believe this. You know, I did so much to get you to these. I said, Professor, I understand. I really appreciate all you did.
But don't you think your education in psychology has helped you on the bench?
And as you said, compassionate, empathy, or yes, definitely. Definitely.
And helps you reading people, too.
Yeah.
You can see things other people can't see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to be a judge so bad.
Me too.
Did you?
Yeah. I went to a whole semester at Drexel before I got thrown out.
Listen, are you got thrown out, too?
I didn't get thrown out.
Is that why we have a good connection?
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Well, it's never too late.
Oh, it's too late. It's too late now.
But you could, listen, I'll sponsor you. You run for a district justice. Not against Chris.
No. Of course not.
Some other county.
We could pass that test. How hard could it be?
I couldn't.
No? We'll have to look into that.
Chris, you think I could?
You're sure.
I've given you a lot of on-the-job training.
I
think you're ready for it.
Yeah. You know, I was sat on the bench once with Judge Maddox, and a very experienced attorney walked into the courtroom, and he sees me sitting up on the bench, and he comes up. And he goes, are you doing on the bench? Yeah. That was fun. You know who it is.
Yes, so, of course. Sure, of course.
We got a couple more people who have to take our next break that are watching us on Facebook, Clean and Sober Radio. Sam Chun. Let's see. John Logue says that 1996, he thinks, he was in Broad Meadows, which is the prison in Delaware County outside of Philly. Mm-hmm. I know firsthand, not a pleasant experience, but invaluable for my recovery. And that's true. A lot of people don't get clean unless they're incarcerated. And I know that in Montgomery County, we have the AA meetings in the prison and the NA meetings, and they are attended mostly for people who really want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other ones just want to get out of their cells. I understand that. But, you know, meetings are very, very important no matter where you are.
Absolutely.
I think we went over this. William F. from Manasquan, New Jersey. Judge, do you see the level of overdoses slowing down? Well, we actually went over that. They're not going to slow down.
No, I don't think that, no.
It's not. They're not slowing
I don't think
down.
It's going to slow.
How much
longer?
I mean.
I don't know how much longer.
How long is going to – this is going to go on. What's it going to take?
I don't know how we're going to stop the fentanyl from coming in. Like, and people who have to use street drugs, who can't get drugs from a doctor, they are going to get the fentanyl every time. And you could tell them all day long. I had signs all over my office that said, check your cocaine, check your pills, take fentanyl test kits with you. And still, you know, you want to use, you want to use. You want to do what you want to do. And you want to feel better that second.
Right. So with my psychology background, do you feel that like a behavioral approach is better with addicted personalities? I mean, I think there's a lot of physical component with the brain and things like, right? I mean,
yeah, it's all neurological.
Yeah.
Their brain has been taken over. So if you get them at that moment of clarity, they'll hear what you're saying.
Right.
If you're talking to the drug, if you're seeing them and they're still on a hangover or on the end of a tail end of a run, you're talking to the drug, you're not talking to the person's brain, but you can see the difference.
Yeah. And I know during an arraignment, they would say anything they could say
anything.
To convince me to let them out.
Of course.
And I mean, so what you're saying has, I'm glad that I'm having that conversation with you because that just confirms what I've seen in front of me.
Listen, if you or a loved one needs help, you're listening to the show and you are convinced that you need to get help or you're convinced that a loved one needs help, call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP, 1-800-662-HELP. And that number is extremely important in a time of need. So put it on your refrigerator just like you would put on a poison control number, because when you start looking for options, it's very hard to get answers. And it's, you know, it's just like it's like the suicide hotline number,
which is 988.
Right.
And that should be on your fridge as well. And people are waiting to speak to you. Counselors are waiting to speak to you at that number 24/7.
Right.
You'll always get a person and someone's always willing to talk to you.
Yeah. It's not like you're going to call that number. They're going to say someone will get back to you.
No, counselor will answer.
Just like the substance abuse and mental health.
Exactly.
People are trained. They will answer it. And listen, Linda and I have been in recovery for decades and decades. So it's possible to get in recovery. Many people do. In fact, in Pennsylvania alone, there are close to 500,000 people in recovery. 500,000.
It's amazing.
Right? That makes sense.
We want more.
How many states are there? 52 or 50? I don't even remember. 50. No, it's not 52. It's 50, right?
Yes.
50. He cracks me.
Can you name all this?
No.
And so if you take 500,000 and multiply by 50, it is – what is it?
You're talking to the non-math brain. 2.5 Judge, million? 2.5?
Help me.
2.5 million?
No, there's 25 million in the there's 25 million people.
Okay. Addicted.
Thank you for that.
Ah.
No, in recovery.
Oh, okay.
In recovery. 25 million. That's why I always say if everybody got together, we could sway any election there is. 25 million people.
If we could all agree on anything.
Well,
right?
That's right.
That's the whole thing.
Well, it's just like the outside of recovery. Nobody can agree on anything.
But inside, we get each other very well.
We certainly, certainly will. Hey, listen, I think I'm getting a signal here from Tyler. We have to take another break. When we get back, we'll continue the conversation with Judge Maddox.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
When you look into the mirror, is your addiction staring back at you? Too many times, that answer is yes. At Gaudenzia, we see you differently. We see you as a whole person, healthy and at peace, living beyond the stranglehold of drugs or alcohol. At Gaudenzia, we see a pathway with tools you can use to lead you to recovering the life you want to live, recovering the life you want to share with the family who loves you. At Gaudenzia, we see hope and believe with the effective treatment we can offer designed uniquely for you within reach of where you are standing, you'll look into the mirror and see the potential for the fulfilling life that is in you. This time, you'll find your hope at Gaudenzia. It's spelled G-A-U-D-E-N-Z-I-A. Call 833-976-4357. Again, it's 833-976-4357. Begin to recover your life through treatment at Gaudenzia today. Begin today.
Hey, this is Jackie Marling, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio. This is still Jackie Marling, and you should listen to Clean and Sober Radio. Everybody should listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Clean and Sober Radio. I'm Gary Hendler. My co-host today is Linda E. You like E, or you like your last name?
I like my last name, yeah. E, whatever.
And Linda has been – I've known Linda, just so a little background, for many, many years, decades probably.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been on the show several times, either as a guest or during the round table. And when Mark is on vacation, Linda fills in. We're very happy about that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Judge, what's it like to sit up on that bench and know that you – could possibly have somebody's life in your hands? That's a big responsibility.
Yeah, and it reminds me of one. You often ask me, like, is there anything that you regret having done, or you know, you're driving home and you think about a decision that you made, and this will be relevant to what I think we were talked about at first, which was the arraignment process. Yeah. I was doing an arraignment, and the gentleman, it was a domestic. And the gentleman was like, I'm sorry, I want to get out, you know. So I was going to send him to George W. Hill. And the family came in and they were pleading with me, please, please let him out. And I'm like, you'll be responsible for him? We will be responsible for him. I'm like, I don't know. I don't have a good feeling about this. I really don't. And no, I let him out. He ended up taking his own life. And that's like one where I'm like, it hurt for weeks. But I told them, I said, I don't want to let him out. And that was sort of like, I wasn't really thinking that he was going to hurt her. I was thinking that he was going to, like, something wasn't right with him. And it wasn't. And the family assured me, no, we're going to. And so I don't want to mention too much about it because I don't want to hurt anybody's.
That's a tough call, but I guess you have to say, you know, I did the right thing at that time, and whatever happened was out of my hands.
Right.
I mean, but that's a tough.
Yeah,
that's a tough thing.
So, can you 302 right from there if you had a bad enough feeling about someone's mental health?
Yeah, we don't do it, but the police get involved and they can do a 302. But the judge itself doesn't do the 302. But so we can get them hooked up, but. It was just, you know, it was a thing where the family was like, they were assuring me that they had it and they were going to control and I believed them.
So, well, that's a lot of pressure. People are pleading with you.
Right.
That's all. Yeah. You know, I couldn't be a judge. You know why? I just tell everybody, go ahead, leave. Because I would start thinking about my own family. I guess you think about your own family. What if it, one of your kids was up there?
Right.
You know, it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we don't always get it right, but, you know, and that, like I said, that was a rare situation, but it hit me real good for like,
I'm sure it did.
Definitely.
Could you be a judge?
No.
Why not?
Same reason. My first client that passed away from a fentanyl OD, I was not right for weeks. Mm. She was doing great. It was one of those things. She was doing fantastic.
Yeah.
And thought she was getting something else, and there was fentanyl in it, and she died. that she had been off the heroin for 3 years.
What are you hearing? Anything about Xyzaline, Trank, elephant tranquilizer?
Out in Delco, no.
Uh-huh.
In Philly, yes. But I didn't have anybody talking about that or taking it out in Delco.
I haven't seen any cases with that.
Yeah. It's called Xyzaline.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody listening to this show, well, anybody listening to this show would sort of get what we're saying. But a layperson would go, why would somebody take a drug that a very good chance you're going to die? I think the answer is once you're in that world, you're not thinking you're going to die. You just want to get feeling better or not sick. And you know what it's like?
You want to feel.
We know what it's like.
You want to not feel in that moment. You want to feel anything.
When you were going through what you were going through, yeah. Did you ever feel like you were going to die?
Never.
That's what I mean.
All I was interested in is getting the next high. That was it. At any cost.
Right.
Right?
Totally agree.
It's like, how does your brain get to that, and then how does it rewire itself?
With the time. That's why we talk about 90 and 90. You can change habits after 90 days. So in 90 days, you can change the pathway in your brain, and when you make the new pathway and you keep doing it over and over and over again for 90 days, you have a good chance you're going to change the
habit. And that's why 30 days.
And you get positive reinforcement.
Right.
From your friends in AA.
And that's why 30 days is not enough.
It's
2 weeks isn't enough. They really – that 90 day is a benchmark, and that's not even enough.
It's not. We know people. You and I know people, or somebody right in my neighborhood who went to one of the best rehabs around. They kept him for 6 months, and then they turned around and said, you know what? You really need more. We're going to send you to Minnesota, the land of rehabs.
Yeah.
And he was in Minnesota for a year and a half. Now he's clean. But it took a long – now he's got several years. I mean, eight. I think he just had 10.
Right.
But, I mean, when a rehab tells you you need another year and a half somewhere else, you have to listen.
Yeah. Chris, when your daughter is old enough, and she knows what you do for a living, does she ever talk to you about drugs? Is she too young for that?
She's 11. I mean, I'm
– she's so smart, man.
I work on her. I just make sure, you know, you know, talk about drugs and alcohol and dad, I would never do that, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
And I get that. But,
yeah,
I mean, there's going to come that time, you know, so I have to get real ready for it. But, yeah, no, I don't involve her in the real serious, you know, depressing, you know, heavy, if that's a word, stuff.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly I do checks with her to see where she's at mentally and what she's thinking and what she's talking about and doing.
Have you ever had anybody in front of you that you knew, or did you have to recuse yourself?
Yeah, I always, if I know them personally, I'll recuse myself. But I've had also neighbors that I didn't necessarily know, so I could probably hear the case, maybe, you know, but it's always a judgment call. But yeah, no, absolutely. You live in the area where you're the judge. I think I told the story one time that I was talking at a class for landlord-tenant in Delaware County Community, and I told them about the old sound-off from the Daily Times newspaper where people would call up. And one of the sound-offs was like, yeah, these judges, they make their decisions, and then they go back to their mansions on the main line. And I started laughing, and I said, well, I wish I had a mansion, but we actually live in the area that we are the judge in. So the crimes happen where we live. So you're going to come on, you're going to come across someone, people that, but if you know someone, like if there's a personal connection there, you have to recuse.
Yeah. Judges, you have to live in Delaware County?
Yep. I'm an Upper Darby judge. I live in Upper Darby in my district.
Yeah.
And then the person that lives, you know, in Springfield, they live in Springfield, you know, they live in there. Yeah.
Wow. So do you have any words of advice for anybody who's thinking about committing a crime in your area?
Don't.
Don't. Tyler, what do we got? Okay, great. Judge Maddox, thank you so very much for coming on the show. We always love when you come on.
Always my pleasure.
I'll see you at dinner when we do it soon.
Okay.
Linda, thanks for filling in.
Anytime.
Tyler, thank you so much. Brad, as usual, great job. Remember, if you're a loved one who's struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. And if you want to get Clean and Sober Radio on your local radio station, reach out to us on our website at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Linda Elkins.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks for all the support that you give us each and every week. Have a great weekend, everybody.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
Tries to bring you